Hi, this is Moby, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.
Hi, everybody. You tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. The show is Flash Talks Cash. We're about money, making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, without my co-host, Andrew Invisible Newman. I don't know where he is. And today, and we're with my producer, engineer, Jack Inslee. And we
Hello.
Have a, hi, Jack. And we have a new guy on staff. His name is Rich. Say hi, Rich.
Hey.
Okay. Hi, Rich. My show today is... Creative Entrepreneur Talks Business. But first, we have to do a couple more things. We want you to know that we broadcast live every Thursday from 4:30 to 5. And if you can't tune in live, you can find all shows archived on the website, www.heritageradionetwork.com, or you can download a free podcast via iTunes. All the episodes are there. So during the show, we'd love to hear from you. You can always send us an email, info@heritageradionetwork.com, or call us. The number is 718-497-2128. 718-497-2128. So call us anytime with any questions, comments, or anything else you have on your mind. Hopefully it has to do with money. Our show today, we have a very special guest. His name is Michael Golden. Is Michael on the line out there?
I am on the line.
Oh, hi, Michael. Welcome to Flash Talks Cash.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. We are starting a new series. It's an entrepreneur series, and we're going to have entrepreneurs from all different walks of life come on and talk to Flash about business, any kind of business question, more about money than anything, but still marketing, sales, customers, anything to do with business. And Michael is the premier show in this new series. So we're going to talk to Michael today and see what his questions are. And I think that a lot of people out there will relate to this because a lot of people have questions and they just want to get a few minutes. Maybe it's like a psychiatrist, you know, just get a tune-up here and see what you're doing, how you compare to other people and other businesses and see how this works. So a little background on Michael. He's been a friend and a client of mine for, what, more than 15 years, right, Mike?
It's definitely been a long time.
A long time. And Michael is a mosaic tile designer by trade, and he's been in his own business for the whole time I've known him. And he's reinvented himself in a couple of different businesses, but now he's working in a pretty successful business. You want to tell us a little bit about your new endeavor, Michael, and we'll start with that?
Sure. I've been in the tile and mosaic business for more than 20 years, and in the last 7 or 8 years, I've been focusing on product development. For quite some time, I was trying to sell my designs on a royalty basis. In the last 2 years, I teamed up with a person named Daniel Sherman, who's based in Chicago. I happen to be based in New York City. And he is a sort of salesperson, general manager kind of person. I'm the creative person. We have very completely different skill groups. And he was looking for someone to develop designs for. I was looking for someone to manage a business with me. And in the process, we started teaming up. We incorporated last year, January 4th. So we've been sort of in a design production cycle for about 15 to 16 months. We started a little bit before then.
Mm-hmm.
Last year's sales, we had sales of $1.3 million.
That's very impressive for a brand new company. That's very impressive. Uh-huh.
Thanks. I mean, we haven't had you know, of course, earnings, but we've had sales.
Well, you mean profits. Profits are different. They're different than revenue. Okay, but that's still impressive. That means you have quite a few customers right out of the gate. Now you just have to figure out how to turn those great revenues into great profits, and that's what the goal is, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Good. Just so my goal was when you were doing your own business, when you were solo for a long time, and you found that you were always looking for someone to help you with the business side of the world. Is that right?
I mean, I was definitely open for a partner.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, the design side was very comfortable. The business side always seemed to be sort of a forced fit at best, or a complete struggle.
So that's very common. Creative people constantly have great ideas and great products and good, potential to take a product and, you know, do something special with it. But they often lack the skills to bring it to market and make it profitable and do all the administrative side. So you and Daniel hooked up and you kind of formed a partnership, but it's a marriage, right? I mean, it's just like being married. Is that right?
It's fascinating. You don't own your spouse. You don't own your spouse, but you have to be monogamous. I mean, Daniel and I, we both came to the business from with additional things that were happening outside of what we decided to form as a joint venture.
Yeah.
And we sort of came to accept that after 6, maybe 9 months, the other things would sort of drop away, and we'd spend all of our time focusing on this. And that being the process, we were giving up outside income,
right.
Hoping that income would start to grow, bear fruit from this joint venture that we call Avenue Mosaic.
Well, that's very common. People often try to start their business, launch a new business, but maintain their existing work, their existing job, whatever it is. And then they kind of find themselves doing two different jobs and not being able to do either one really well until you get to a point where you're going to devote all your time and energy into one job. So now you and Daniel are teamed up and it's going along well. And so let's talk about some of the questions that you have, particularly when it comes to the finances, because that's your weak link. And between Daniel and me, maybe we can help Michael understand the business side and make it more profitable, because that's the goal. You got revenues, but you got to figure out how to make profits. So what's on your mind about money?
Well, the first thing that you and I started speaking about prior to this sort of whole thing was, you know, what are the analytics that we should be seeing in our company, and then what is the frequency of those sort of analytics? Now, maybe that's even the wrong term.
Yeah, analytics.
What are the numbers?
What do you mean?
What are the numbers? What are the topics that we should be looking at, and then what is the frequency?
So you give
a point of reference. We tried to go with someone, an outside source, to help us with QuickBooks to sort of take care of all of this.
Yeah.
Ended up being a real failure.
Mm.
We now have a part-time, semi-full-time person who's helping us redo all the books from last year, and it pretty much brought us up to the current time period.
Right.
So, you know, with this, what are the reports that we should be looking at? What are the reports are easy to generate?
Okay.
And how much time should they be spending making up these reports that we can look at?
Okay, so you're talking about understanding the finances at this point. When you have a good bookkeeper / accountant, one or the other or both, these reports should be looked at the minimum quarterly. I say in a small company like yours, when you're growing right out of the gate, a monthly report to see where your revenues are, where your money is being spent, and how you're going to generate more money. You're always going to spend more money early on than you make. That's a given. So the point is, you're going to have to try to figure out how to minimize your expenses, but you have to spend the money. You're going to have to buy insurance policies. You're going to have to put a little bit money into the website development and things like that, which will eventually make money for you. But, you know, dollar for dollar, you can't measure income against expenses against those things. But the point is, If you have a decent bookkeeper, your small business, when you start out, doesn't need a full-time bookkeeper. You get somebody good in there to do it however often you need it, whether it's once a week. But the key is to have them do a good job. Once you realize that the person is underwater, they don't know what they're doing, get rid of them and try to find somebody better. You and Daniel should be reading monthly profit and loss statements. What's your income? What's your expenses? Zero in on that and start to see when you start to turn the corner. You got to look and see when you're going to start turning the corner. That means, well, your income will be greater than your expenses when you can stop, well, I don't want to say hemorrhaging money, but spending money, starting up, and let it be where the reward of the customers and the product sales start to roll in. So every month.
Okay, but for a profit and loss is sort of a general, generic thing.
Yes.
In our case, we're selling goods, and there's definitely a profit in all those goods.
Well, you mean direct profit, but then you have to import. Then you have to include your overhead, which is where you lose your profits.
Okay.
You are selling the product. You automatically have a profit. Oh, by the way, Andrew Newman just showed up, and he's going to say hi and jump in with us.
I am here, but.
Everybody's
so
happy that
so
Andrew's here. And Michael, if Andrew has a good idea, because Andrew's a bookkeeper for many small companies such as yours, and he might be able to help you with some of the bookkeeping questions. But the point you're making, or I'm trying to make, is when you sell your product, you have an automatic profit margin on the sale of the product. Let's just say it's a 20% profit margin. You sell something for $100, it costs you $80, you clear $20. That's your gross profit. But then out of that $20, you got to pay your overhead, and that's the expenses where you have some sort of control sometimes.
You can have a percentage. Your markup on your cost of goods is where you create the percentage for your fixed expenses.
Well, some in a new business, though, you often can't pay out of your gross profit all your fixed expenses. So
that's only if your revenue isn't enough. But
you cannot raise your cost of selling. The selling price.
We're having a fire sale right now.
Yeah, we hear that.
Yeah. You can't raise your selling price in because you need to cover more expenses, because sometimes the competition or for other reasons, your selling price is somewhat fixed.
But you shouldn't cut your sale price because you're not covering your own costs. You should keep your price at a certain level. What? You wanted me to chime in here, and then you throw your hands up.
So, Michael... So go ahead. Let's start with, you know, you have a gross profit, and now the problem lies in your variable costs, your overhead expenses.
Well, they're pretty fixed.
Well, right now this is going to go in three or four different directions.
Yes.
One is, you know, when do we start to have a financial plan? Our sort of model of what we're doing seems to be changing almost every third of a year.
Well, of course it would. Because you're learning the business. It's a brand new business. You got to learn how to do it, and what's working, what's not working, and how customers behave and what your expenses are. So that's a fluid thing, that business plan, those projections.
I mean, is it important to start to have a financial plan even within the first year or two of a business as things are evolving so quickly, or is it just simply better off looking at you know, the profit and loss, sort of trying to go in the direction where things seem to be more profitable and trying to budget in what we think are reasonable costs, you know, for the foreseeable 3 to 6 months?
Right. A business plan is a really good estimate. It's just an estimate. You don't know. It's projections. It's just based upon what you know at the time and what you think is going to happen. As time marches on, you now have a better handle on what is happening and what you can foreseeably see. You know, each month you get closer to saying, okay, I think by the end of this year, we're going to do X. I think in a brand new business, projections and business plans are really... fantasy sometimes, you know, it's just what we'd like to have happen. I don't know that a new business can really stick to a projection or a business plan that came out without any real experience. I think a profit and loss is the tool you're going to have to use as you grow.
But then you're reactive and not like proactive.
Well, I think you can bring it down to unit costs, but that's pretty specific right now. You got to see which products and which customers are working and generating the best profits for you.
And I mean, it's the kind of thing where Now, right now, we sell about a dozen different product collections, and each collection has between 5 and 8 SKUs. Is it terribly important that we know what each one of those sold per month or per quarter?
I think so.
Terribly important to.
I would say yes. If there are different profits on or different costs associated with the different SKUs, if they're all the same. And everything costs the same, and everything you sell for the same, then I would say it's not necessary to know that level of detail.
I think it helps with trending and stuff like that, and projecting out.
But he doesn't buy inventory and things like that. He just does. You do it by orders, right? If you get an order, you purchase. So it doesn't matter that he has to buy something that's going to sit on the shelf if it doesn't sell. But if all your product costs are the same and all your selling prices are the same, you don't necessarily need that information.
Well, it turns out that we have a few different deals that are going on right now.
Right.
We have one deal. Our first company that we started to work with, and the reason we got so many sales is because we started selling/selling product to a national distribution company that was already set up with their own sales staff, and they sort of had a gap in their line, and our stuff was able to fill that gap. And they have salespeople both in the U.S. and Canada. And we were able to get sales fairly quick. As a matter of fact, we gave agent samples to our salesperson the week before Thanksgiving, and by Wednesday we got a sale.
Well, that's pretty good.
So we got sale within the first 3 days.
Wow! If sales are so good, maybe we have to look at what you're selling, and maybe there's more room for you to increase your price. But you know what, Michael? We have to take a break for a minute, and we're going to come back and talk about some more questions and finish up this thought about selling and your price. So we'll be back in 1 minute. Hang on, okay?
Okay.
Messing around with jerks. My car is parked outside. I'm afraid it doesn't work. I'm looking for a partner, someone who gets things fixed. Ask yourself this question: do you want to be rich? I've got the brains, you've got the looks. Let's make lots of money. Educated. I studied at the Sorbonne. Doctored in mathematics, I could have been a don. I can program a computer.
Hi, I'm Katie Kiefer, co-host of The Main Course. This Sunday on May 15th, we'll be welcoming Eric Asimov of the New York Times. He's the wine critic and he writes the column The Pour. He also has a blog by the same name. We're excited to have Eric, and we also have with us Lydia Shire, who among her other restaurants in Boston is one of the owners and the chef for Loch Obers, one of the oldest restaurants in the United States that's in a nationally historic building. So that should be a really fun show. I hope you'll tune in.
Okay, we're back. Flash Talks Cash, and we're talking with Michael Golden, creative entrepreneur with questions for Flash and Andrew. While we were on the break, Andrew was yelling at me because he disagrees with what the advice I told you, Michael. So he's going to tell you.
It's not the advice. It's just the way you say it.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Michael. I mean, go ahead, Andrew.
Well, I just think he has.
Michael's right there.
I understand. I think Michael has an idea of what his fixed costs are going to be, his utilities, his rents, his insurance policies, things like that. Does he not? How does he not?
Well, he does, but he has a lot of startup costs, too, that are going to be one-time hits or expensive for now, but they should go down in time.
Well, but you shouldn't plan that in. You should plan your fixed costs. You figure out what you want to get paid. Then you figure out how much it costs you to purchase your product that you're then selling. And then you make a little model and you figure out what you have to sell, what your then margin is going to be, how much money you're going to make, and then you can recoup your costs for your initial outlays.
So, Michael, the question is, do you have wiggle room on the selling price?
We have not really. Put it this way. We have established our prices, and one of the etiquettes of the tile business is to keep your prices frozen for at least a year, and then really after that, try to You can have slight increases, but for the most part, the prices have to be frozen on a yearly basis. You can't. It's not like gasoline where you can change it every day.
But the way I see it, when you tell me you came out of the gate and 1, 2, 3, you got a sale, and within the first year or the first 18 months, you did over $1 million in sales. That means that you have a good product and you have a good price. That's what it says to me first. But if you are in a bad situation as far as losses go, and I don't know your bottom line, but you don't have to disclose that. The point is, if you're losing a lot of money on a million plus in sales, then maybe your selling price is too low. If you're losing money because your initial startup costs were included in there and they're not going to be recurring, then your selling price may be okay. That's something that you need to analyze.
Well, let me just jump in. Mm-hmm. We're short on cash for a few reasons. One, because we never started with any kind of sort of big funding.
Yes.
We literally started with a pair of credit cards, his and mine.
Right. Very common. Very common.
The second is that that although we have this distributor that takes care of helping us do sales,
yes,
and they also take care of the invoicing, and the key things with them is that they also float the cash. Mm-hmm. So they take care of the ordering of the product, and they take care of the collecting.
Yes.
However, what that means for us is that there's a six-month lag between the time that we get a sale to the time that we actually get payment.
Collection, right. So you guys need a credit line to keep you through through that period.
Well, that's sort of where I'm leading. And mm-hmm. the third part of that is that when we develop a product, we estimate that it costs anywhere from it costs about $5,000 to $10,000 to develop a product between time, between samples, between travel, mm-hmm. and everything else.
And how often do you develop a product?
Well, we're actually finding a tremendous demand for our products. So initially we talked about maybe doing 6 per year. I think right now we're looking at probably in the frequency of about 3 a month. And I'm actually hoping two to three a month. I'm actually hoping that can increase.
Can you afford, if you're telling me it's going to cost that kind of money to research and develop a product, can you afford to generate 3 a month or 6 a year? How much did you say it costs to develop it? $60,000?
Well, we figure that it costs $5,000 to $10,000 to develop a product line. Between everything, getting even up to marketing materials.
Right. Well, it's R&D, so that's got to be incorporated into the selling price because that's going to, however long it stays. If you develop 6 products a year, are you going to keep maintaining those 6 and add another 6 and add another 6? So in 10 years, you're going to have 60 different products. Is that the plan?
I might have not said what I... We're right now at a frequency that we're trying to develop 2 to 3 products a month right now.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping to make that to become, even more, even like 4 to 5 products a month.
But do the old products drop off and the new ones replace? Or are you going to increasing your products?
Well, we're going to... We're definitely don't want to have our product step on other products' toes. So we're looking at diversifying. I guess it's not really the right term, but we're looking at expanding what we're offering so that it covers a lot more options for the consumers out there. We're also we find because there's so much cost involved in developing this, and we've been working with a number of manufacturers that we've been having continual sales with, that they're actually becoming interested in having us develop products for them. So when we start developing products for them, the costs go way down.
Is that a private label kind of a concept?
Well, we're already doing private label work for other companies, and we're doing private label sales both in the U.S., Canada, and we just got South America as well.
Yeah.
But we're looking at trying to work with both a South American manufacturer and also a Chinese manufacturer, and doing sort of royalty-based designs with them.
Okay. You know what I'm hearing, Michael? It's very, very common for a new business to start out selling a product or a service, and they underestimate their real costs to get the product to market and make money. So you're stuck with a price. Once you fix it, you're stuck kind of for a year. But as you develop new products, you have the ability to raise your prices, don't you?
We do, and right. and we're finding that some of the newer things that we're introducing are slightly sort of premium items.
Good, so you can raise the selling price.
We are asking for a higher profit
right.
margin.
Right.
Profit margin might not be the right term, but
no,
we're
your highest
for a higher,
selling price.
You know, number between the buying cost
correct.
And the selling cost.
Right, right. And that's what you're going to have to do as a businessman. You're going to fine-tune that regularly until you, first of all, you have to sell it for as high as you could go without losing customers at the right price. It's a very difficult thing to find the right price, and that's something that business people do regularly. They tweak it. When they raise it too high, the sales don't come in. If it's too low, you have so much sales, but you're still not making money. So the key is to find the right selling price. I think this is a very common problem that you guys have to learn, and it comes over time through experience. And you got to define who your customers are. Are your customers going to be every Tom, Dick, and Harry in America? Or are they going to be an exclusive group? Are they going to be, you know, a broad appeal? You got to decide how you want to market to you and which customers, and then you're going to be able to determine your selling price a little bit more.
Well, I hear you. I mean, we have a network of salespeople with the initial distribution company, and then we have other people that we're talking to that we hope to sell to other companies.
Right.
From my point of view, what's so fascinating is that, like, we're trying to sell to a company out west that we're going to sell the product for, let's say, 3X.
Yeah.
A year and a half ago, I was trying to sell them the same product for 1X.
Right.
And I couldn't get them to return any phone
right.
calls
it's
or even emails.
It's
but
perception.
The salesperson that we have working with, and mm-hmm. they're a good friend of mine,
yes.
They know my partner and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ironic because now they're taking our phone calls,
yep.
and the product is costing more, and it's the same thing.
Well, it's very common. It's perception. People want to think that they're selling a higher quality product, so if you sell it for more, you're going to get a customer who's going to think it's better. It's very common. You go to Bloomingdale's and you go buy something in Bloomingdale's for $50. You can go to Macy's, buy that same product for $40. You could go to Century 21 in New York and buy that same product for $25. It's the same product. But the customers are different. They're perceived differently, and they see price as a relation to some other thing. I don't know what that thing is. I'm not a marketing guru, but people think the more they pay, the better it is, and that they're more valuable or they're better customers, and it's a very psychological thing. So I've heard that story before. You were selling it too low. That's what you were doing.
Well, maybe.
So,
okay, so listen, Joby Wan Kenobi, I've got some questions for you.
Okay, hurry. We got 3 more minutes, so pick the best questions for the next 3 minutes.
Okay. Is it important to keep a log or a history monthly, month to month, as to what your company is doing in terms of how it's evolving? Is that as silly as it is, or is something
well,
that truly has any value?
Evolving in what way? In a financial way? In an order way? In a customer thing? Because many of these reports are right in your QuickBooks. They could tell you how your revenue is doing, how the number of sales are, how you're adding customers. Those are generally in a QuickBooks or any sort of accounting program. So I don't know, or use emails to document some other things.
Okay. Is there, I'm so hungry to read about non-tech, non-high-tech startups.
Right.
Something that's some kind of case study.
Yeah.
Do you recommend any books? Are there blogs? Are there PDF papers? Are there podcasts? Other than this kind of thing, what else can you recommend that someone like myself can just churn through and consume?
Well, there's lots of books out there, you know, those self-help kind of books, how to, you know, market your company, how to grow your sales and stuff like that.
Seriously?
I'm just telling you, when I started my business, Michael, what I thought that I needed most my help in was sales. I am a great accountant, I'm a good technical person, but I wasn't good at selling. So I went to the library and I took out all the books about selling. I picked a little few things out of each one of them, you know, they were all weren't great, but there were a few that hit some points that I used, and I think those books are out there. There's probably, you know, you just want to even something like the Times. has a, in their business section every week, a couple of days a week, they have a small business, it's like questions. And they,
I already downloaded the book, book corner office.
Okay, that's it. And I find that to be simple to understand. It's just the kind of questions that you're asking. They're basic business questions. And they say, how would you approach this problem? Those are the kinds of things that I think work. I think reading something like the Wall Street Journal is probably a little too technical for you. Reading those magazines, Entrepreneur Magazine, Money Magazine, Inc. Magazine, they may be able to hit your points sometimes. And there's lots of blogs, but I don't know blogs. You know, I don't have time to read blogs.
Okay, and lastly, you know, we are this, I heard this term, micro multinational. I mean, we're right. buying product from overseas.
Right.
We're selling it in the U.S. We're selling it in South America.
Right.
What are the things that, are you familiar with any of the tools that one can sort of manage a company that has absolutely no centralized office? We have half a dozen salespeople around the country.
Right.
We have other selling groups as well.
Yeah.
We've got files. We've got documents.
Right.
We do microblogs. I mean, right. Is there anything that, I don't know.
Well,
I'm trying to figure out what the brave new world tools are.
Okay,
out there.
Well, that's, I was just going to say, that's the 21st century version of business. I think it's very common nowadays. There's no centralized office. I think that, in my opinion, each person should be appointed or charged with doing certain functions of the company, maintaining records or whatever it is. Each person in the company should be charged with different functions, whether this person's in charge of keeping the financial records or this person's in charge of keeping the files for the sales leads or whatever it is. I think that you guys have to designate different functions and operate it as if you're operating a business, but you're just not sitting in the same office anymore. And, you know, I think, you know, you're very familiar with technology. You use the Skype all the time. Internet makes, you know, business a whole new world. And I think that I can't imagine what else. The world is a small place, and I think that whatever we're saying today is going to be passe next year. That's how fast technology is moving. So, you know, it's just going to. I think spending money on technology, which you know, I know that you do. You like to stay current, and just keep making your job easier. But make sure you communicate with your. I think you should put it down in writing what your jobs are, and make sure that everybody has a specific function and that they're responsible for. Even though you're not in the same place. And if anybody ever needs...
You can always set up a server somewhere and put all the information in one location.
I understand,
and everyone can
log
in.
One person has to be assigned to do this part of the business. Another person needs to be assigned a different part. Just because you're not in the same office anymore doesn't mean you don't run it like a real business.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I can tell you that to some degree, I mean, you know, I do the creative stuff. Daniel does the general management stuff.
Yep.
We're passing... Some things are clearly his. Things are clearly mine.
Yes.
There's some middle ground that we're sort of evolving.
Yes.
And that we still do a very simple handoff on responsibilities. And I still ask him to confirm that he's going to do something.
Yes.
And he has to get back to me on it. I mean, it still comes down to that. You know, it still comes down to almost a handshake in terms of saying, listen, this is on your desk.
Right.
It's for you to do.
Right. I think that's
very common. And he's not perfect, nor am I.
Right. I think it's very common. That's the way of the world these days. That's the way businesses run. Whether you were in an office and left a memo on his desk, or you write him an email and say, look, this is on your plate. I need you to get back to me in a couple of days and tell me what the results are. That's pretty normal these days, and I think that's the way that's natural, and I think that's the way it's going to have to be for now until another great invention comes along. Michael, we're going to have to say goodbye. We want to thank you for being with us today. And,
thank you, my pleasure.
And keep us posted. Let us know how you're doing in the business. We'd love to hear from you again.
Okay, you know, let me make a suggestion. In 3 months from now, let's check back and talk again.
That would be fabulous. Let us know how you're doing. We'll talk to you in 3 months or sooner. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Katie Kiefer with Behind the Scenes Food News for the week of May 11th.
One of the most exciting things that I found in my trolling of trade blogs this week was the announcement of a new initiative called AgRE. That's capital A-G, small R-E-E. So it's sort of agriculture and green, I suppose, is the idea behind that. And the co-chairs include Dan Glickman, who is a former secretary of the USDA under Clinton, Gary Hirschberg, who is the president and CEO of Stonyfield Farm, Jim Mosley, who is a former deputy secretary at the USDA under George Bush, and Emmy Simmons, a former assistant administrator for economic growth, agriculture, and trade at the U.S. Agency for International Development. So this is kind of a mixed bag of political viewpoints here, which is what made me really sit up and take notice. It's funded by all the usual suspects like the Gates Foundation, the Ford Foundation, etc. But leading off in their first meeting, Glickman stressed the importance of involving all stakeholders and seeking common ground in addressing the need to feed a growing global population and doing so in ways that are environmentally, economically, and socially sustainable. And the eight foundations that are backing AgRE, he notes, agreed to set aside their political differences, as did the individual co-chairs, to develop research-based long-term solutions and strategies. I think this is a gigantic step in the right direction. I'm hoping that these guys will have a huge impact on the Farm Bill, which will be coming up again in 2012. So let's keep an eye on AgRE. If you want to read more about them and what they're doing and their news, they do have a website. It's www.foodandagpolicy.org. This has been Katie Kiefer with Behind the Scene Food News.
Did you know we have a beer show? Check out a small clip from Beer Sessions Radio.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and I'm here with Ray Dieter from the DBA Boys.
Hey, Jim.
Ray, this is a fun show. We're drinking Belgian beer. We're drinking Ichtigum. Hanging out with the guys from the 124 Rabbit Club. We got Don and Wendy from Van Berg and the Wolf. Well, let's go back a little bit to kind of build your pedigree. So the two of your top brands that we love and that you have now, Scaldis and Saison DuPont.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell us how you met those guys, how you started working with them.
Well, Saison DuPont was really... that was.
If you want to hear more, head over to heritageradionetwork.com where new episodes of Beer Sessions are posted every week in our archive. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. The following is a message from Heritage Foods USA. In the next few weeks, Heritage Foods USA will be offering an interesting variety of amazing products, ranging from top quality seafood to their famous pork cuts. At the end of May, the Heritage team will go up to Maine to harvest fresh lobster with sustainable lobstermen. These delicious lobster are a perfect way to kick off the summer season. In the pork department, Heritage Foods USA will offer the maple-cured, smoked, boneless Heritage ham at an unbeatable price. This offer won't last long, so get them while you can. Place your order today at heritagefoodsusa.com or call 718-389-0985. That's 718-389-0985 to place your order with Andrea or Ashley. And don't forget to sign up for the email list and to check them on Facebook and Twitter to get in on their new products, deals, and offers from Heritage Foods USA.